This is Greater LA KCRW show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Governor Gavin Newsom says the state is shutting some things down again in Los Angeles County and more than a dozen counties across California to slow the spread of COVID-19. Restaurants will once again be forced to revert to a delivery and takeout model only.
We have specifically targeted our efforts to close indoor operations, and I want to reinforce this, indoor operations in restaurants, wineries and tasting rooms, movie theaters, family entertainment, broadly defined by guidelines that we had previously put out, zoos, museums, and card rooms in this state.
Now, the county already shut down bars last weekend and closed beaches for the upcoming 4th of July holiday weekend. But the restaurant dining room closures add more misery to an industry that this year has been food poisoned. Farley Elliott is a senior editor at Eater LA and broke this news prior to Newsom's announcement today. Hey, Farley.
Hey.
Restaurant dining rooms were allowed to reopen several weeks ago under specific guidelines of maximum occupancy. What was it, 50-60%, I believe. Why is Newsom putting the lid back on?
Well, I think you see the numbers that are spiking all across the state. I mean, Los Angeles, by some metrics, is now leading the entire country in terms of density of coronavirus cases. So it's a troubling thing. And I certainly, my heart, I want to stress this, goes out to all of the restaurant operators and employees who did feel safe being at work and trying to make a living. But it just seems from a health and safety perspective to be a little bit untenable right now to have people gathering indoors.
Man, this is such a big blow to many restaurants that were just trying to get, you know, back on their feet after being shut down for months. Do you think this could mean more permanent closures of restaurants?
Well, I think some people towards the beginning of the pandemic were already predicting north of 50% of total restaurant closures in greater Southern California. And that sounds like an alarming number. But when you think about how hard it is already to make a living in the restaurant industry, and then you start placing caps at 60% of dining capacity or telling people that they have to rely on delivery apps that take 15 to 30% of any order, it just feels completely unsustainable. And now to be toggling back and forth, hiring, letting people go, buying food that then is going to go to waste, it's so hard to see a proper pathway forward.
Have you heard from owners and workers that they were anticipating this happening again? I mean, we kind of saw the writing on the wall, didn't we?
Yeah. And, you know, in our reporting, we've obviously been pretty doggedly chasing this for quite a while now. We started hearing from some contractors and other sources related to the government that maybe this was going to be coming, but it wasn't until this morning that it actually dropped. And I think smart operators have either managed to stay closed, probably because they're well-funded enough, or because they saw something like this coming. But for everybody else just trying to survive, it's, as you say, yet another blow.
You think they were buying more to-go containers? I mean, bags, things like that, more, you know, those accoutrements, if you will, for delivery and takeout options.
Well, everything's a challenge. You've got to buy proper protective equipment for all of your employees. You've got to buy plastic shields to put over your faces and your face masks and, you know, rearrange the corridors and hallways and spill out onto the street and maybe update your tables. I mean, all of it costs money. And without a large-scale government intervention at the state or federal level, which frankly doesn't seem like it's coming, I think it's going to be pretty devastating.
I know Newsom's announcement is coming right as we head into this big holiday weekend. Can we assume, Farley, that folks are going to be panic buying again? I mean, that, you know, the restaurants are shutting down. We're seeing the bars shut down. The beaches are closed. That we're, you know, sort of, it's like, you know, Groundhog Day, like Catch-22.
You know, I hope not. Obviously, there is a lot of need in poorer communities, in communities dealing with the elderly, places that have a lack of access. We'd hate to see another run like we did at the beginning of the pandemic. And truth be told, I think we all have kind of established this as our new baseline, for better or worse. So people have a trudging understanding that we're all going to get through it in whatever form it looks like.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't really know. It just remains to be seen. It is certainly scary out there for people that are paying attention.
I know there have been some specific outbreaks, too, COVID outbreaks at restaurants in L.A. and Orange County, forcing them to shut down altogether. Do we have some specific examples before we go?
Yeah, Bub and Grandma's a really prominent, really well-liked bakery. They wholesaled to some of the most well-known restaurants in Los Angeles. They had to shut down. They've now had 7 people, I believe, test positive for coronavirus. You look at Red O, Rick Bayless's restaurant down in Newport Beach. They shut down and are trying to come back. So, you know, it's very real and very scary, not just on the diner side, but it's specifically for employees too. And that's why Newsom is saying you can dine outside, but you should stop, you know, continue to do delivery and takeout as much as possible.
So do you think over this break, before, I mean, we just have a few seconds, is this an opportunity for restaurants to reopen safely in the next 3 weeks?
Safe is going to be problematic. I think you're looking at a longer-term lifeline than that.
All right. Farley Elliott, senior editor over at Eater LA, thanks for taking the time out to talk to us. What a time, Farley.
Thanks. Be safe.
You bet.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. COVID-19 is not taking a summer break. The numbers are up. Cases, rates of infection, of people in the hospital. Flattening the curve is now turned into trying to re-flatten the curve. Public health experts expected an increase in cases once LA County began that slow process of opening back up. But the numbers are exceeding expectations by a lot. So did the county and state open up too quickly? Did protests affect the numbers? What went wrong? Dr. Deborah Prothro-Stith is the dean and professor of medicine for the College of Medicine at Charles R. Drew University of Medicine and Science. Welcome back, doctor.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
These numbers are, I mean, going in the wrong direction. Last week, officials estimated that 1 in 400 people in LA County were infected with COVID. This week, that estimate is now at 1 in 140 people. And next week, they say it could be 1 in 70. What do you make of that? I mean, is this all just because of the reopening starting over Memorial Day weekend? What's going on here?
Well, I think it is correlated with the reopening. But quite honestly, what's going on and the mistakes that we made as a country date all the way back to the beginning. And obviously, this virus has infiltrated and spread a lot more than anticipated. We did not do the appropriate epidemiology and contact tracing way back in January and February when we had our first cases. And testing, we just have not been doing the testing, even now as we have, as a country, started doing more and more testing. We're just behind the curve, and it's so difficult to catch up.
How bad do you think it'll get?
You know, it's hard to predict, but I think the 1 in 70 ultimately is likely. These things spread exponentially, so you have one person infecting, two people infecting, those two people, you know, it just multiplies in a way that's, horrifying at one level. So I do expect that we might get to that 1 in 70.
I know health officials are saying the increase is partially due to the restaurants and businesses opening and not following protocol. Mask requirements for certain, but that's not the only reason that we're seeing the numbers rise. I mean, what else can we attribute these numbers to? I mean, again, I want to ask about, and the New York Times, by the way, did a deep dive on protests and by and large said it's not necessarily a reason why these numbers are going up. There are so many other factors in this as well. What is going on?
I think you do see quite a few people out without masks. I think we have a virus that has a period of having no symptoms, being asymptomatic, but also being very much able to spread. We are learning more and more about this virus, and it seems that we have quite a few asymptomatic people who have been spreading the virus, and the openings where there is close contact without mask, the protests where there's close contact without mask. I mean, all of those factors have to be considered. Fortunately, I think most people, especially when you look at the protests, were out with masks. But of course, we've seen quite a few images of people in bars that did not have masks on and were clearly not social distancing.
And by the way, way more people in those bars than were at the protests. I mean, when you talk about it collectively.
You know, I think that what we understand about this virus is that the human contact is the way that it is spread, the droplet mechanism being the most understood. And at this point, wearing a mask matters, and, you know, washing hands matters, hand sanitizer matters. And, you know, we just have to be as vigilant as we can, but we are in a pretty alarming place right now.
Another aspect of this that's also alarming, according to public health officials and yourself, this is the number of people in the hospital. Those rates are rapidly going up. By next week, the LA County numbers may surpass where the county was at its peak. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about back in April.
Yeah.
Are you worried that we may overwhelm the healthcare system worse than even before? Do we have the capacity for it?
It's possible. I mean, the good news is that we can still do those things that reduce the spread. But the hospitalizations going up is a pretty clear sign that it's not just that we're testing more people and finding more cases. And I think that it's possible for sure that there was a lot more spread of the virus. Again, given that people can have it and spread it and not have any symptoms, not know that they have it and that they're spreading it. You know, we could have a situation worse than April.
Speaking of hospitals, we have an ICU nurse with us on the line as well. Alicia Padilla is a healthcare worker at Kaiser Permanente Downey, the medical center there. Alicia, thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
What are you seeing over there in Downey at your hospital?
We are seeing an increase in the numbers of hospitalization. We do have a 30-bed ICU, 20 right now for COVID patients, and 10 designated for non-COVID patients. And we're about full to almost 20 right now. We do have a couple of units on the hospital, which are telemed surge units, and they are full with they have a east and west side with about 30 beds each, and almost filling up with both sides.
The county this week was talking about how a lot of these cases are younger cases now. There was a 40, I think their number was 40% earlier this week, 40% increase in cases among people 18 to 40. Are you seeing that? What's the average age of a patient at your hospital? Do you know?
Average for us right now, it's about the 40 to 50 year old. That's our average right now. But keep in mind, we don't know yet. I mean, we can have this coming week with increase in the 30s and 20 year olds.
Are you concerned by all of this? I mean, obviously you are. It seems like a dumb question, but my goodness, how are you guys dealing with this?
You know, yes, very concerned, most definitely. We as a team have stuck together. We've learned a lot from, you know, just initially, because we didn't know earlier on. You know, this is such a novel virus going on. But, you know, just with all the research coming out and just trying to really implement and stay on top of things, I mean, if that's however we could do it, we learned to do different techniques, staying outside and leaving all the pumps outside and running the lines that give the medications and things to the patient from outdoors. When we prone the patient, putting them on their belly sooner to help relieve the pressure from the abdomen and the lungs and on the lungs and the heart, and helping increase the oxygenation and also the drainage. This will help them breathe a lot better. So we were implementing that a lot sooner. And to a lot of these patients, we'd have to do that as well.
Yeah. Dr. Prothero-Stith, before we let you go, I want to ask you the same question. What your level of concern about all of this and what the county can do? I mean, is it time to shut everything back down again?
I think that's a consideration. It's a really difficult time for people. This is when you are planning vacations, planning travel. And so it's hard. And I appreciate that at a personal level. But I'm very worried. And I do think that as a society, if needing to shut down again is part of what we need to do, then, you know, those making that decision should have our cooperation. I am like the policymakers, quite worried. And I really appreciate the frontline workers because their, you know, their support, their health, their strength, we're depending on that. And I think we have to hear very carefully what they're saying.
I want to thank both of you, Dr. Deborah Prothero-Stith, the Dean and Professor of Medicine for the College of Medicine over at Charles R. Drew University of Medicine and Science, and Alicia Padilla, an ICU nurse over at Kaiser Permanente in Downey. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I just want to remind everyone listening, please, please wear your mask, you know, practice social distancing. This really has to be something of a cultural change. We all need a change, a societal change. You know, just please, please wear your mask, because right now we're okay with PPE, but we don't know. If the numbers continue to rise like this, we may not have any, and we don't know who's next in that hospital bed.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW and Steve Chiatakis. It's lunchtime in the heart of Santa Ana.
Eso fue de la comida que recolecté. Agarré calabacitas, papas, y tenía un pedacito de bistec que compré.
Esperanza Corona de Rosas has a stew of steak and vegetables simmering in salsa verde on the stovetop in her apartment. Her husband Sergio waits anxiously to be served.
Cuando la conocí, pesaba 178 libras.
When I met her, I weighed 178 pounds, he says. Now I'm up to 220. Sergio loves his wife's cooking. Esperanza loves to cook. But simple things such as buying groceries have been tough for the Corona family lately because of the economic crisis caused by COVID-19. Only Sergio is working right now. He delivers court documents. His wife is a nanny, but she's out of a job.
Y es muy difícil pagar la renta y los gastos.
She says they're constantly worried about paying their bills, worried about making rent. And on top of it all, both are undocumented. The social safety net afforded to the vast majority of Southern California residents is elusive to them. And it turns out, what little money is there has just run out. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb has been following the story. He covers immigration and immigrant life for us, and he's here right now. Hi, Benjamin.
Hey there, Steve.
For citizens of this country, Benjamin, there are myriad relief programs available. If you lose your job, there's unemployment. Obviously, there's federal assistance right now in the form of the CARES Act, which I believe runs out at the end of July. But what about for undocumented Californians?
The short answer is there's not nearly as much, Steve. I mean, there are roughly 2 to 2.5 million undocumented people that are living in California, and they are not eligible for the benefits that you've just described. Well, you know, Steve, this virus does not discriminate based on immigration status. There is tremendous need in the undocumented community for medical and financial help.
The state does, though, Benjamin, have a program that it rolled out amid COVID called DRAI, D-R-A-I. It stands for Disaster Relief Assistance for Immigrants. Remind us, what that program does.
That's right, Steve. Governor Gavin Newsom directed the state to set aside some $75 million a few months ago. And the idea was to give people who lack legal status that live in California some money. The money is being doled out in one-time payments of $500 per individual or $1,000 per family. And it's kind of like a stimulus check for undocumented people. And one of the families that's been able to receive this money, Steve, is the Corona family.
All right. So has that money helped them out?
Absolutely. But because it's only a one-time thing, a one-time payment, Sergio tells me he's really worried about what's next.
Pues aquí en el área de Santa Ana, tuvimos suerte de encontrar un lugar seguro.
They live in a part of Santa Ana, he says, that is relatively safe. It's on the corner of this two-lane street. It's well landscaped. There's a beautiful big magnolia tree right in the courtyard of their complex with white flowers. But all of that comes at a cost. The rent for this one-bedroom apartment is just over $1,500. And while the relief money from Sacramento helped them this month, Sergio is worried about next month, the month after, and so on.
Porque no solo nos sube la renta cada año, sino que también todos los biles suben cada año, la gasolina sube cada año.
Not only does rent go up every year, he says, but so too do all the bills, gasoline, insurance, food, everything you need to live. And so he says, unless things change, his family's going to need some more help.
There are a lot of people, though, Benjamin, in California and in other places who don't think we should be spending tax money to help people who are not here legally, who are undocumented. Did you ask Sergio and Esperanza about that?
Yeah, we did talk about that. And they say that what many might not understand is that even though they lack legal status, that doesn't mean they don't pay taxes. And that's why Sergio believes so strongly that they should get help just like everyone else.
Hay personas que piensan que, es que ellos no están contribuyendo. Es una mentira.
There are people who think that, they don't contribute, Sergio tells me. That's a lie. The IRS, for example, estimates some 6 million undocumented people actually file tax returns. And that's about half of the total population of people who lack legal status that live in the U.S. And everyone pays sales taxes, right, whenever you buy something. But again, the programs that are meant to support people in time of need that those taxes feed into are not there for the undocumented. Esperanza also says helping undocumented residents like herself is in the best interest of the economy.
Todos son esenciales y aunque no tengan un estatus correcto en este país, son parte esencial para este país, porque si este país se para todo.
She says that they are all essential workers, and even though they don't have legal status, if you separate them from everyone else, you separate the country. She feels that undocumented Californians do a lot of the jobs that others don't want to do. And in her mind, the economy of the state would fall apart without people like her.
So Governor Gavin Newsom unveiled this disaster relief program, DRY, as I mentioned, a few months ago to try and patch some of the holes, so to speak. How many people has it reached?
Yeah, well, the State Department of Social Services told me they've approved more than 82,000 applications so far, and 64,000 people who lack legal status have actually received their money, like the Corona family. There's still more money to be distributed, but it is taking, Steve, a lot of time.
With about 2.5 million undocumented in the state of California, I bet there are a lot of people who have been trying to sign up. How has that process been working?
Well, it's been incredibly competitive, and local nonprofits have been tasked with enrolling applicants and helping them secure the cash. And I got to tell you, Steve, they've been completely flooded with requests.
We are still overwhelmed with phone calls and interest. Our last numbers in terms of daily phone calls into our organization were about 600,000. However, it's very clear to us that the need is much greater than our ability to process.
That's Angelica Salas. She's the director over at CHIRLA, the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights of Los Angeles. And yeah, you heard that right, 600,000 calls a day. That's into an organization that right now has maybe 100 people manning the phone lines. Salas tells me her staff is also having to have some really heartbreaking conversations over the phone.
Some have become ill with COVID. They've had lost loved ones who are ill or who have passed away. Spouses have lost jobs. They don't have access to unemployment benefits. They're about to, lose either their home or they're, haven't paid the rent. There are people whose phones have gotten disconnected. So you just see you're having conversations with individuals in a very difficult time in their lives, and they see these $500 as so significant in helping them not go into further economic disaster in their homes.
So as you can imagine, Steve, the demand for this money remains extremely high, and that's despite the fact that no new applications are being accepted at this time. And with the state in such bad economic shape, no one really knows if any more help is going to be coming down the line.
My concern is in this moment when lots of difficult economic decisions are being made for the undocumented community, the decision is always wait, not you, not today.
And we're going to have to wait and see, Steve, what happens in the coming weeks and months. We're entering a really crucial phase in the fight against this disease, COVID-19. If the economy needs to be scaled back again in California, these are the people who are going to feel it the most.
It's certainly a delicate balance, to be sure, between public health and the economy on both fronts. It's always, unfortunately, the less fortunate who feel the effects the most. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb. Benjamin, thank you.
Anytime, Steve.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, like anyone with a birthday these days, America is celebrating in a more muted way. But what about all those fireworks in the streets? We're online at kcrw.com/GreaterLA. The latest on the pandemic and the closures, of course. You can subscribe to the Greater LA podcast while you're there as well at kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Amy Ta, Kat Yore, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Amy Roken, Christine Camito, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears, and have a great night.